Welcome to the Farmers Weekly Podcast, this episode recorded on Friday the 12th of February 2021. From the Farmers Weekly News Desk, I'm Johan Tasker.
And I'm Hugh Broome.
In this week's episode, vet students on farm, how to make lambing work for them and for you.
My lambing placement was hugely formative in my ultimate journey of wanting to go on to become a sheep vet.
On the markets, the latest arable prices, and why are store cattle so expensive?
We take a special look at the latest countryside stewardship offering.
In effect, one application could include up to £60,000 worth of items.
And we speak to the winners of this year's Farmers Weekly Awards.
We announced the winner. It was just so good. It was just unbelievable.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
But first, how much would you have to be paid to stop farming? Well, 75% of tenant farmers say they would consider retiring depending on the value of a government package offering them the opportunity to leave the industry. DEFRA plans to offer eligible farmers in England a one-off lump sum next year in place of any further annual direct payments, which are due to be phased out in any case by 2028. The survey was carried out by the Tenant Farmers Association, and we asked TFA Farm Policy Advisor Lynette Steele about the significance of the findings.
I think they're really significant. Although not unexpected, it really cements the thoughts that we already had, that the industry is ready and keen for a retirement scheme to come into place, and that there's a real appetite.
Why do so many of your members need a scheme like this?
The ability for tenant farmers to release assets to be able to exit tenancies is obviously more challenging than owner-occupiers. So this scheme would offer another income during their retirement process, which would allow them to be able to move off these holdings into alternative accommodation, as well as in some cases set up maybe a different kind of business so they have income beyond their retirement age. So really for tenant farmers, this would offer a real vital lifeline for them to be able to move off the land and allow that land to become available for other farmers, whether that's new entrants or farmers who are looking to increase their acreage.
So this could benefit people coming into the industry as well as people leaving it.
Absolutely, yeah. It could really boost those farmers who are looking to make their next steps in the industry, certainly.
That's Lynette Steele of the Tenant Farmers Association. 2 decades have passed since the last time an early retirement scheme was talked about seriously for farmers, in the aftermath of the BSE crisis in the 1990s. One of the proponents of an early retirement scheme then was NFU Scotland President George Lyon. Today, Mr. Lyon is an agribusiness consultant, and we asked him what he thought of the idea now.
I think that the UK government's proposal has some merit. If you look at the changes that are coming, and of course the great unknowing is how much the future support system is going to be worth in pounds, shillings and pence to farmers. But given the big changes, for a lot of farmers, the idea that they can maybe just decide that they no longer want to continue, I do think it is a good thing to offer some sort of incentive to try and clarify that decision in farmers' minds. Because it's always a very difficult thing if traditionally you've been in a farming situation where you've inherited the land. It's very difficult to come to that view as to whether you should give up. I mean, I'm from a seventh generation farming family, and we can trace back the tenancy of the original farm that we started off in back to 1720 when we took the tenancy. So it was really, really hard when 9-10 years ago I decided to give up actual practical farming.
And that's a particular challenge for tenant farmers.
Yeah, that's absolutely the huge challenge as tenant farmers you face, in that unlike owner-occupiers, you don't actually have any value in the land, which therefore means that in terms of trying to work out whether you can afford to retire, usually the value you earned, it might buy you a house, but it certainly won't offer you a huge standard of living unless you've actually put away substantial amounts of money to live on in your retirement.
Former NFU Scotland President George Lyon. Alison Rickett of the Fresh Start Enterprise Centre is a succession planning expert who helps farmers into and out of the industry.
I think at the moment a lot of people feel they have very few choices. It's either a case of keep farming because there was no other option, or a case of having to sell up or come out of that, whichever agreements they might be in, which is a huge shame because there's a lot of experience and knowledge there that we should be making best use of as well. This option of a lump sum of money, it could be very useful for some if that's what they would like to take, but we don't know the terms and conditions of this yet. And again, if we can set everything out in front of people and say, these are the choices that you have, let's get the right advice and support for you so that everybody's an individual, but you can pick the right route for you. So that's what we should be looking at with any support going through.
That's Alison Ricketts of the Fresh Start Enterprise Centre. And as you heard there, details of this retirement scheme are thin on the ground, but DEFRA will consult formally on a proposal to offer lump sum exit payments to farmers in England. And we expect that consultation to begin sometime this spring.
So, Johan, how much are these payments going to be, do we reckon?
Well, this is a big question, Hugh. DEFRA aren't really saying much at the moment, and we really need to know sooner rather than later what the details of this scheme are. We've done some calculations at Farmers Weekly. We know that direct payments are being phased out on a sliding scale from 2022. The last payment will be in 2027. And based on that, on a sliding scale, we reckon that it will be about 2.5 to 3 times the annual basic payment that you received in 2021. So about 2.5 times what you usually receive. Whether that's enough for some people, of course, remains to be seen. I think it will be enough for some, but others will think, well, 2.5 times my annual basic payment isn't very much money at all. So it's going to depend on how the scheme's administered and what it involves.
And of course, we have no idea what the small print's going to contain. Some people may also argue that actually the money, you know, if these people want to retire, then fine, you know, just let them retire. Why do we need to give them 2.5 years payment up front? If it was like a 10-year payout or something like that, it might be, you know, it'd be very different. And actually, some people may also argue you're better off spending this on, I don't know, productivity grants for people that want to invest, get ahead in their business, do the very best, then concentrate on them and spend the money there. Because presumably money's going to be limited on this. I mean, it's not going to be an open checkbook, is it?
I wouldn't have thought it would be an open checkbook. I would expect that, you know, especially for larger farms, which receive lots of basic payment, I would expect there to be a ceiling on this, on the amount that they can take all at once. And what that ceiling is, again, we don't know. We also don't know how they're going to deal with things like family partnerships, limited companies. It might be okay for simple cases, an individual farmer farming as a sole trader, perhaps. But you know, how do you ensure that a family member has left the business and has no further involvement in it? So it's going to be complicated, I imagine, in some cases.
I would imagine mixing and matching with succession, some people carry on in the family business, some take the payment and get out. It's just not going to happen. It's too complicated. Some would argue it's just not fair. The whole point of this, presumably, is to move people off the land when their time is done and get some new blood, some young entrants to make that market more accessible. So that's got to be a good thing. And some would actually say, would you not be better off also spending that money helping those youngsters get on the land with generous grants as opposed to paying the previous ones to get off, if that makes sense? So what's the timeline on this now, Johan? When does the consultation start?
Consultation timings, we've been told spring, but we have been told spring could be any, in government terms, spring can be any day up to the day before the first day of summer. So it could be, and then of course you need to get into the debate as to when is the first day of summer. Is it the first day of April? Is it the 21st of March? You know, when is it? I don't know. But we are being told spring. The other thing to point out is that this only applies to farm businesses in England. Other nations, the devolved nations, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, have signalled that they intend to phase out area payments over a longer period. So this is an England-only scheme at the moment. And we also need to point out that this is not just for tenant farmers. This, as we understand it, this would be for owner-occupiers too. But of course, as Lynette Steele was pointing out, and George Lyon, you know, tenant farmers do have particular issues because they don't have the asset base that owner-occupiers do, so they have less money in the pot to retire with.
We'll have to wait and see what happens, and of course we'll come back to this when the consultation actually begins.
Hi, I'm Philip Cosgrave from Yara. There's always debate on when is the right time for that first nitrogen application in grassland farms. Grass growth in early spring is influenced by these first nitrogen applications, and even though the response to this nitrogen is low, the extra grass is very valuable, particularly to spring block calving herds. There is no point in applying nitrogen if soil and weather conditions are not favourable. Soil temperature should be at least 6 degrees Celsius, and it shouldn't be the case that the whole farm is spread at once. Instead, target parts of the farm that are drier or allow for earlier turnout in most years. On farms with high stocking rates, up to 30 kg of nitrogen per hectare can be applied on good ryegrass wards, and this can be made up of either slurry nitrogen or mineral nitrogen. Slurry nitrogen could be prioritised on paddocks with low covers. Allow 1 kg of available nitrogen in each cubic metre of cattle slurry if band spread, and 0.8 kg if applied by splash plate. As for that mineral nitrogen, a good choice for this timing is Yara Bella Nutri Booster. It's CAN based and contains sulphur and selenium in every granule. For more information on Yara Bella Nutri Booster, go to yara.co.uk.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Every year, vet students help with lambing across the country. This vital practical experience is a key part of their studies and provides a really important helping hand on many farms. But how do you get the best out of the student when they're with you? And how do you make sure the students are happy and getting the experience they need? Annabelle Lustrick is in her fourth year studying at the Royal Veterinary College.
I think lambing is probably one of the most hands-on placements we ever get to do compared to the other things. The other placements that we might do. So I think it's our one time where we really do get to have responsibility and do kind of get to be in charge of all the aftercare, all the actual lambing itself. So I think definitely sort of the practical side of thing we want to be doing. And I guess, you know, there's all the things as well on the side, sort of just the care of like the ewes, the care of the lambs, whether that involves, you know, any antibiotics. Around that, the responsible use of the antibiotics, recognizing some common like neonatal diseases. It's kind of, you know, our first chance to practice being a vet and diagnosing things and correcting things, correcting positions.
She told us how rewarding the practical experience is.
The first time I corrected a breach and the lamb came out fine, I think you really, because it's terrifying. You mean, you don't know what you're feeding. It's the first time we go in any kind of body cavity. And you get, you know, you have to know what you're feeling. And then you have to, I think I was on my own, so you have to make those decisions on your own. So when you do make the right call and that turns out to work out well, then you did make the right decision. That's super rewarding because that's something that you did on your own using the information that you've learned either from uni or from the farmer. And it kind of gives you confidence to then take more actions on your own and improve your decision-making and your practical skills.
Andy Jackman from Surrey has spent decades welcoming lambing students onto his farm.
They would be in the observational role to start with. And then, for say, the first 48 hours, if they followed me around, they would get to learn certain things to start with, what to look out for, etc., etc. And then they would be reporting back to myself or one of the other senior members, because we used to have some second time lambing students. They'd come back a second year. Well, they, of course, they could, the newcomers could shadow them as well. So they had two sources of information.
Emily Gascoigne is a specialist sheep vet from Dorset.
My lambing placement was hugely formative in my ultimate journey of wanting to go on to become a sheep vet. You get to see the inner workings of a commercial sheep farm. Lambing, I think, is sort of the best of times and the worst of times. You know, real successes, you're working really hard. It's rewarding every day that you're turning lambs out or another ewe's lamb successfully. But equally, it's really hard work, but they're all really good skills for agricultural and veterinary students to be exposed to and take part in.
Emily told us it's vital you spend time explaining to students when they come on farm what you want and that it's time really well spent.
They will probably need to invest some time at the beginning of lambing in familiarising them with exactly what happens on a normal sheep farm during lambing, perhaps the standard operating procedures, how you do things, perhaps what you're working towards during lambing as you've had a chat with your vet. So really invest some time at the beginning in training them. It's very different reading about it in a textbook or a lecture to actually
suddenly be looking after a pen of ewes. Or I think one of the things that's so important about lambing placements for vet students in particular, but for all students, is you're making decisions constantly to intervene, to not, to help those lambs, to not. And I think actually, Bill, you need to have a certain level of confidence, and a farmer coaching at the beginning of a placement in particular is time well spent.
Hugh, things seem to have come a long way since I was lambing in Wales in the mid-1990s. I did 3 weeks of night lambing, and I was more or less given a half-hour tour of the lambing shed and then left to get on with it.
Well, yes. That doesn't surprise me. It has. I mean, it's really important for these guys. We don't lamb here anymore, but when we did, we had loads of students and they were absolutely brilliant. And we used to end up having, they all want to do 2 week sessions. And actually, well, I should just point out that this isn't just about lambing, because we also have students who come and help with the calves now and do other things. It's just about getting their practical on-farm experience. And I think it's really important to do. Obviously, for the vet students, it's vital. And actually for the other students as well, because we currently have a 1 day a week student comes in and does work experience. She's doing an animal care course, and then we've ended up employing people that have come on a more permanent basis who've been doing that. So it's really important to do. It's really great to see them develop when they turn up and they haven't got a Scooby one end of a sheet from another, because they've just spent the last 2 years looking at it in textbooks, and then suddenly by the end of the 2 weeks they're all over it and doing really well. But you just have to be sensible, don't you? You've actually got to show them what you want. You can't just, like, you were dumped in the middle of a lambing shed and left to get on it. You can't just sort of grunt at them and walk away and expect them to run your lambing shed for you, because they're not going to do that, and neither party's going to get the best out of it.
And I think people expect a lot more than that these days, don't they? They expect a little bit of TLC, both for the student and for the ewes and for the lambs.
So as you heard in the audio, they're really important to tell these students what you expect from them and how your farm works and how the lambing works and what the objectives are of the exercise, you know, as well as all the normal good practice in terms of risk assessing and explaining risks to them, safety talks. Remember, some of these students will never have been on farm before. It might be their very first practical experience. It's also bearing in mind the current coronavirus thing going on. You need to work out what the protocols are for COVID. These students are going out onto farm at the moment. But of course, they're doing it under certain protocols, so you need to agree with them what that is going to be and how that's going to work. One thing Emily told me, which was quite interesting, for her really big vet farm clients, where they've got big, lots of sheep to do, so they have gangs of vet students basically turn up to help with lambing. She was telling me that they ask her to go and do a briefing to the students. So she spends an hour or two with them explaining, as a professional vet, talking to trainee vets, what's expected of them, I suppose, in vet language. You know, it's a useful experience for them, and it sort of sets them on the straight and narrow going forward. If you want to find out how you get in touch with the colleges, there are lots of ways to do it to get students. Obviously, there's lists of universities online that have veterinary courses. National Sheep Association, on their website, they have lists of people looking for placements you can go on to. The other one is the Farm Animal Veterinary Society. And if you go on their website, they have a load of resources there to link students to farmers. And then, of course, don't forget all the local colleges, the smaller colleges where they're doing animal care courses or some of the agricultural courses, the students there that are looking for work experience as well. And we've done that here as well. It's so rewarding, and it's absolutely time well spent at the beginning, showing them what you want and then letting them get on with it. And it's just so good to see when they have those skills, and the confidence building for them as well is just phenomenal.
And terramycin spray will be provided, presumably.
and iodine for iodine finger. And if you're not doing it and you think you might like to do it, then, as I say, get in touch with the colleges or the universities where there are students looking for work experience.
My name is Ben Madarassi. I am farm director for Hunterpack Produce Limited, which supply major retailers from key growing areas across the UK. We depend on a fleet of 28 massive acres and tractors to plant, harvest and deliver in excess of 100,000 tonnes of root crops to our processing plant based in Preston in Lancashire. They are reliable, cost-effective and practical, and our dealer Clark & Pullman provide excellent service and backup, which is key to the success of our farming operations.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
You are indeed listening to the Farmers Weekly podcast. Welcome along wherever you are listening to us. We really value your reviews. Thank you so much for those. And also, don't forget, if you want to get in touch, you can. It's podcast@fwy.co.uk. That's podcast@fwy.co.uk.
Right, feeder wagon corner. Hugh, where is it this week? This feeder wagon that you've ordered from Poland. Is it anywhere closer to you than Basingstoke?
No, it's still in Basingstoke. As I speak, it's still in Basingstoke. Waiting for the haulier is the status of the feeder wagon. So you never know. It could possibly turn up any time. So I'm just, how you know, I weeks. Yeah. I just blame Brexit. Yeah, we'll get there in the end, eh?
The markets then, what are the prices doing?
Thank you, Johan. Finished steer, dead weight average this week stays pretty much the same, 378 pence per kilo. The live weight average, 206.9. That is actually back a penny on last week. Two lambs, SQQ, dead weight average this week is up again, 580.6, nearly getting towards that 6 quid. It's only 20p off. It's up from 558 last week. The live weight average on lambs this week goes up 4p to 269. We'll update those prices more in a minute with Michael Priestley with some more up-to-date stuff actually from this week, because that market is just going bonkers at the moment. Arable market feed week currently 196.50 a ton. That is actually back about 20p on the week. Milling wheat 215.30. That's up about 3 quid on the week. Feed barley actually finally for once is edging back a bit. 158.50, back from 160 last week. Oilseed rape, 384.70, up from 376.9 last week. Now, talking of those sheep prices and the cattle, store cattle prices have been absolutely immense the last few weeks. Farmers Weekly's market specialist, Michael Priestley, joins me now. Michael, firstly, the store cattle prices, they're pretty much on fire at the moment. Why do we think that is?
I think it's lack of availability, really. Amid a very strong beef price, which has got finishers wanting cattle of any age, really. Short-term cattle are the kind of specialist finishing cattle, aren't they? Kind of 90-100-day cattle, but those are being brought to market quickly, and those are a lot. There aren't many of those in the system currently. If we look at the HDB figures for store cattle, this is like a bit of a proxy of where the market is. Two-year-old continental cross steers, they are 1,120, 1,200 pounds. Last year, they were kind of around about 130 pounds a head below that. There's serious demand. There aren't enough cattle to go around. Agents are looking hard for them.
And Michael, the sheep market is really buoyant as well. The headline numbers from last week, the averages I just read out there are going up. You've got some figures actually from this week, and it continues to rise.
The HDB said has predicted there'll be 7% fewer hogs carried over from last year largely because of Brexit and people selling beforehand. About 3 weeks since, there was a little bit of a drop in price, but that's been more than recovered since then. And they're up about £2 to £3 a head this week. Monday's sales, live weight sales average 274.5. That was 5.5p up on the week. Tuesday was 272.6. That was 3.6p up on the week. And Wednesday was 271.1. That was 6.1p up on the week. So that's something that would be about £2-3 a head up on the week. So I think people selling both live and dead will be looking at the dead weight approaching £6 a kilo. That's all auctioneers are saying, that's where it might have to be to command enough lambs. But with a good trade this week, and if the weather does just settle down, lambs will be coming off routes, and it might be a big entry next week. The demand from Europe for sort of quality continental bred lambs is really strong, and it put in a really strong underpinning on the price.
Farmers Weekly's Michael Priestley. They're also worth noting this week, the Port of Dover put out a press release, interestingly, saying they're 90% back to where they should be for this time of year after all the disruption that's been going. I think there is still some disruption going on, but certainly things seem to be moving, and the sheep meat market just surging at the moment.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
A much improved countryside stewardship scheme has opened for applications from farmers in England for agreements starting in 2022. Lots more capital grants are available, including new options to improve air and water quality and new options for upland farmers too. Vicky Robinson of Natural England says each application could be worth up to £60,000.
Up until last year, there was a total of 24 items that could be applied for through the capital grant offer. They have been expanded, so we now have a total of 67 capital items, and so that can be applied for online. They are categorised into three different categories: boundaries, trees and orchards, air quality and water quality. And the previous £10,000 cap for an application has also been increased, so you could have up to £20,000 in each of those three categories. And so in effect, one application could include up to £60,000 worth of items.
So what sort of things can farmers apply for, Vicky?
In the hedgerows and trees and orchards element, you've got the items that were available previously, for example, hedgerow coppicing. We've also now got tree surgeries and also wildlife boxes as well. In the water quality, you've got things like pasture pumps, you've got gateway relocation, water course crossings. Some of these will need endorsement, as we have at present, by catchment sensitive farming officers. And then in the air quality is a new objective for countryside stewardship that has been introduced this year. There are items such as automatic slurry scrapers and low ammonia emission flooring for livestock buildings. And again, for the air quality items, catchment sensitive farming officer approval is needed. And there's also a requirement for some of these to be in particular catchments in particular areas.
So check where you are and get approval from your local catchment sensitive farming officer before you apply.
Absolutely. And on the gov.uk, in the manuals, there is a very good table where it lists whether or not that catchment sensitive farming officer support is required.
Upland farmers, there's some changes for them as well.
A couple of changes, actually. One of the options, it's called the management of rough grazing for birds, has been expanded in terms of where that can be applied, which is something that I think will be welcomed. And also the management of successional areas of scrub has also had the maximum area of scrub reduced slightly from 10% to 5%. And the feedback we've had from farmers in the uplands is that they really wanted to do this option, but that a high percentage, the 10% area of scrub was just a barrier to them. So we've reduced that. And in addition to that, there's been a lot of discussion about wood pasture, a really important habitat in the uplands. And so we now actually have three bespoke wood pasture options in the uplands for creation, restoration and maintenance, which previously weren't available.
Educational access, some change there too, in terms of it now being available in the mid-tier.
Yes. So previously, educational access is only available in higher tier, but we were having, again, feedback from customers, especially those whose higher level stewardship agreements were coming to an end, that they would like to continue if they were going into mid tier and they couldn't continue with educational access. So we've made it available in mid tier. And I think given obviously the discussions that are going on at the moment and the level of interest in what is going on in the countryside and people obviously accessing it more than they would do previously due to COVID, I think the ability to have this option in mid tier and to enable farmers to invite and host school visits, I think is absolutely fantastic and very, very timely, given some of the discussions that are going on about public access and people's knowledge at the moment.
Some key changes then to capital grants, upland offers and to educational access. Vicky, with direct payments being phased out, there is increased interest in countryside stewardship. Is there enough money in the pot?
Well, the proof will be when obviously we receive the applications and the application window closes. But I think that increased interest is just absolutely fantastic. And I know anecdotally I'm hearing of, you know, farmers who haven't been in an agri-environment scheme for some years thinking of applying and looking at mid-tier. So I think it's very welcome. And it's great that Countryside Stewardship can support people as they go through, you know, changes on the farm, thinking about what environmental outcomes they can deliver and how they can do that.
That's Vicky Robinson from Natural England.
Countryside stewardship will eventually be replaced by the government's forthcoming environmental land management scheme in 2024. DEFRA has promised that anybody switching from countryside stewardship into the ELM scheme will be able to do so without penalty. John Ainsley is the farm manager for Skelton Farming Limited in North Yorkshire. He told us that they're ready for changes to the support system.
We've known this has been coming down the line for a wee while now, and I've already been sort of planning in my head, you know, the bits of ground that we can take out, what we can do with, and looking at the yield maps when you put a profit per acre on the yield map areas, as areas that really aren't doing any good in production that we can take out. And if we can make those into environmental areas in whatever form to improve and enhance the business and everything else with carbon, then that'd be great. To be honest, I'm quite looking forward to that in some ways.
Farm manager John Ainsley. Paul Dennison from farm business consultant Strutton Parker says farmers should seriously consider applying for countryside stewardship. The capital grants are a valuable opportunity to improve a farm's infrastructure and prepare for the future while getting some much-needed income.
They want more people to adopt these, and with the BPS falling away over the next few years, then this is a good opportunity to try and recoup some of that money that's lost and get a foot in the door with the environmental schemes. People won't be disadvantaged by entering a scheme now if the new ELM scheme comes along and there's better options for them. So yeah, anybody who enters into one of these stewardship schemes now will be able to transfer over into an ELM scheme at a later date without any penalties.
That's farm business consultant Paul Dennison. And we've two pages on countryside stewardship explaining what has changed, why to apply, and what to watch out for in the latest issue of Farmers Weekly. And that's the issue of Friday, the 12th of February, 2021.
So, Johan, this scheme is now live and people can apply.
That's right. It opened on the 9th of February. And I would recommend that people look at the gov.uk website because some of the closing dates have changed, some haven't. The interesting thing about this, Hugh, is I think you can slowly see the way that things are going and the direction of travel in that countryside stewardship, some of the new options are the sort of options that we are expecting to see in the environmental land management scheme down the line. And anything appeal to you in particular?
So there's quite a lot of new stuff in there talking around air quality and water quality. It's stuff that we've talked about on the podcast before in terms of air quality, where we've talked about how we need to reduce our ammonia emissions. So one example there is automatic scrapers are now an item in the capital items list. So you put those in and obviously they get the muck away as quickly as possible and into the slurry store and therefore reduce the amount of ammonia that is emitted. Water quality, bags of options there from permanent electric fencing, permanent normal fencing to try and keep animals out of watercourses to stop them all muddying up and silting up, losing topsoil into them. There's things for putting hard standings around water troughs, improving field gates, all that sort of stuff. So there's lots and lots of capital items in there. The only criticism I would have, it's the nightmare that is the .gov website, is trying to actually find the current list because all the previous stewardship offerings are listed on there. Trying to find the 9th of Feb one is a bit tricky, but it is there when you finally drill down about 17,000 layers lurking. And there's some good stuff on there. And you start to get a feel as well, I think, for some of the themes of stuff that's going to appear here on the ELM scheme in the future. And of course, Johan, they've said that, of course, if I go onto this scheme now, then presumably I can transfer seamlessly onto the ELM scheme when that's finalised, can't I?
You can, and that's important to point out that we've had repeated assurances from Natural England and from DEFRA, in fact, from Farming Minister Victoria Prentice, that people who sign up now will be able to switch without penalty, and I think that's really important, without penalty to the Environmental Land Management Scheme in 2024 when it comes online. And I think that's important because before then we're going to see basic payments phased out or phased down. So countryside stewardship and grants like this are going to be increasingly important for farm businesses to try and recoup some of that lost income.
really good that the capital only items have gone up from 10,000 to 20,000. And then if you look at that in the three areas where you can invest as well, that's quite significant hike up in money. So that's got to be good news. And the fact that obviously you can morph into the Elms thing. Perhaps there still lacks slightly options for grass only farms, particularly if it's permanent pasture. And if we're going to get to, I think the government wants to be 25% of farmers, what they would deem to be nature-friendly farming, doing these sort of schemes and the agri-environment stuff, then that's going to have to sort of perhaps broaden out a bit to try and bring some of those people in that would not have considered going into agri-environment before. But obviously, this is a long and winding and some might say torturous road towards an Elm scheme that one day we might actually get the details of and find out what's going on.
We'll keep a close eye on it and bring you the latest news as it happens, as it were.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
A week of very special programmes showcasing the Farmers Weekly Awards, and the winners finished last night with the unveiling of the coveted Farmers Weekly Farmer of the Year Award. The prestigious title was won by Peter Eccles from Midlothian, who'd won the Farm Manager of the Year Award.
We're just sitting there with the kids covered in lasagna and half-naked children. They were just getting ready for bath time, and it came on, and because I'd won Farm Manager of the Year, I really wasn't disappointed. And then it came along where I didn't fully understand what that was until they said that they were going to pick one person out of all the winners of all the categories. And then I just started to get this sickening feeling when I was trying to piece it together. Why hasn't any of the things we filmed featured? And just at that point, they announced the winner.
It gives me great pleasure to announce that the winner is Peter Eccles.
And I just felt, sick. It was just so good. It was just unbelievable.
Abby Reader from South Wales took the Farming Champion Award. She told us how the awards team had been a bit sneaky in getting her to film on her farm.
So I had a phone call before Christmas, firstly from Man of New Cymru and then follow-up from Farmers Weekly, to see if I would participate in some filming to talk about the impact of COVID just on the farming industry. So the day before Christmas Eve, a film crew arrived. We didn't spend much time talking about COVID. It was a little bit confusing. We seemed to be talking about a few other bits and pieces. At the time, I didn't really think much of it. And no one had mentioned anything about Farmers Weekly Awards. Then I heard it was going to be on Farmers Weekly Awards, and I thought, oh, well, we're the entertainment for one of the nights. And then last night, I was watching to see if I could spot my favourite cows, and it was announced. So, it took me totally, totally by surprise. It blew me away.
The Farmers Weekly Lifetime Achievement Award was this year given to Prince Charles.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot tell you how surprised and touched I am to be receiving this award, but very sad that current circumstances prevent this happening in person. The award means a great deal to me.
Here's Farmers Weekly editor Andrew Meredith.
Prince Charles, as everyone will know, has been a long-standing advocate for agricultural and environmental issues through his work with the Prince's Countryside Trust, which supports farmers around the land with training and events to attend, but also through his advocacy on environmental issues. Now, in the past, some of these things that he's come out and said have been treated with some scepticism. He's raised a few eyebrows. But with hindsight now, we see actually that he was an early adopter of many principles that are now entering the mainstream. So for all those reasons, and of course, his unstinting support for farmers and the farming industry at moments of crisis, such as foot and mouth disease and flooding, like in the Somerset Levels, when he was really out there on the front line showing his support for farmers.
Andrew went on to tell us what to do if you miss some of the awards programmes this week.
If you go to fwy.co.uk/awards, you'll find links to all the episodes there to consume on YouTube or wherever. And also, registration is already open for the 2021 competition, and you can register there to put yourself forward or someone that you know that you think is a brilliant advocate for farming in whatever sector. And let's do our bit to recognise the contribution of some fresh faces again later this year.
Hugh, fantastic to see the awards this year. A little bit different to normal. People receiving their awards whilst they're sitting at the table, probably in their pyjamas, eating lasagna rather than in their dicky bows and ball gowns at the Grosvenor Hotel. But some good videos as well put together by the team, and long may it continue.
Absolutely phenomenal. Really good effort. And I urge you, if you haven't watched these, you can just go onto YouTube, Facebook, Farmers Weekly website, search Farmers Weekly 2020 awards, and then there's five films, and they've got all the, and they're really good, so well worth a watch, and congratulations to all the winners across the board, because everyone's done really well. And as you heard Andrew mention in the piece there, the 2021 award window is now open, and you can download the entry form or fill it in or whatever you have to do and get it sent in super quick. And you never know, next year, fingers crossed, we might actually be sitting in a big room, in the big room, the great room at the Grosvenor House, as opposed to in our pyjamas eating lasagna, which is wonderful, but obviously it's needs must. But phenomenal stuff. I urge you, go and watch those films. They're really good. And as ever, it's always great to look around someone else's farm business.
That's it for this episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast. Do subscribe to us at wherever you listen to your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course the Farmers Weekly website at fwi.co.uk. Our next podcast will be available next Friday, when we hope to be talking to a Farmers Book Club, an online book club that has brought people together to read and discuss books during COVID.
And of course, we'll have all the latest news and markets info for you as well. But until next week, from me, Hugh Broom, goodbye.
From Johan Tasker, goodbye.